On this episode of The Flitty Show, number 74, a Brenda Starr update, colostomies, Justinian II, and Muslim invasions. All this and more. The Flitty Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Hello. Welcome to the Flitty Show. Click. Tab for my diet. You know how I said last week, make sure that cords are plugged in before you start recording? Well, the cords were all plugged in, but my microphone was turned off. So you didn't hear the click, but it's there and it's tab. Oops, hold on, it's going to come off. The metal. Welcome to the Flitty Show. I am Kenty. Jose is taking a nap. My co-host. And again, welcome to the Flitty Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or call me at 206-339-JOSE to leave me a voice message. And that phone number is courtesy of K7.net. You too can get your own phone number from K7.net. Just go to the website, sign up for it. It's free. Or it was. I'm just assuming it's still free. It's just a toll call. Unless you live in Seattle, I think. And people who leave you a message, that message will be sent to your inbox in your email. So, isn't that cool? Okay, let's see here. Today's show, a lot of medical things going on. But I wanted to say a couple things. Come to MySpace and find the Flatus Show. I think it's MySpace/Flatus Show. And if you have a MySpace page, you know, come over and become my friend. You can also come to my Frapper map. That's frapper.com, I think, /Flatus Show. I bit my cheek, so it hurts. I'm like, I can't think because I'm out of breath here. Yeah, I have so much to talk about. And this is a long show, so. Okay, yeah, come to the Frapper map, sign yourself up. You know, Alex, Sweden, my first European listener who signed my Frapper map. Thank you so much. That show last week was dedicated to Alex. It's all about Sweden or Svenska. Okay, I talked about Nikolai Gaeta last week, who was a Swede, and he's in an opera called Vanessa. It was from the '50s, American opera. He can sing anything. He sounds like a native in anything he sings. Now, I have something that my friends can use, my Flatish listeners can use. I got a really good, witty remark, because you know how gay people are always witty? Even if you're not gay, you too can be witty, is what you can say. This is how it works. You know how some people are like, I think that person, or let's say this, okay, I'll just use a name, okay? Ken, you know that Tim guy who sits over there in that cubicle? Yeah. Well, I think he's gay. Now, this is your response. Who do you think you are? Nikolai Gaydar? Get it? Nikolai Gaeta? Nikolai Gaydar? It puts him in his place because, you know, you can't know if somebody's gay, even if they're, you know, the biggest queen on the planet, you know. They probably are. But, I mean, that's sort of like gossip I hate. So what do you say to people who are inquiring or like being gossipy about people and thinking about their sexuality? You say, what are you, Nikolai Gaydar? And then sort of, you know, this is opera related, so it's sort of gay related. So it's really interesting, you know. So that's what you can say. On MySpace, there was a search for ukulele, and I came across this woman, Ms. Moonshine, And she plays ukulele. And I said, oh, yeah, can I be your friend? So she signed up, and she's really cool. So go over to MySpace page, and you can find notes. You can find the links in my show notes. And then find Miss Moonshine and click on it and go to her page, and you can listen to the music she sings. It's very good. I love it. So I want to pimp her site. She's part of a group called the Sob Sisters, and she does a bunch of stuff. Once you go find her page, you'll find her website. But I also found that, you know, like right under my nose, it's all this ukulele stuff going on right here in Massachusetts, in Somerville. There's Craig Robertson, who I've heard his music several times. He's from, you know, this area, from, I guess, Somerville. Oh, my cheek. I bit my cheek. And I need reconstructive surgery. So, so, you know, he's, you know, pretty big in the ukulele world. And he's performing at Johnny D's on the 13th. So I'm thinking about staying in town to watch him. Ukulele Noir, I think it's called. Very interesting, very cool, much better than I am. Of course, he's like professional ukulele player. I mean, I guess he does other things too. I don't know if you could be off you. Well, unless you're like, I don't know. Maybe you can be a professional ukulele player. I don't know of any, but you know, that doesn't mean they aren't out there. Well, there's that Watanabe guy, or what's his name? I don't know. Unless you're Hawaiian, so. But I'm more the Tin Pan Alley kind of ukulele guy. I like the Tin Pan Alley stuff. I like the stuff from the 20s and the 30s, and especially the 20s. I don't always play public domain stuff, but I love public domain. Because I don't have to deal with anything. I don't have to pay, you know. It's like, the thing is, you know, I could play like a public domain song, but who's going to hear it? I mean, just me and you, right? It's not like I'm selling it. And it only lasts for 10 weeks. I mean, then it goes off. And I'll keep it up if you want. Actually, it's changing now. I'm starting to archive my shows and our media. So as I go, I'm going to find out the most popular shows and then put them back up. So, you know, people who have been looking for older shows, email me and I'll make sure I'll stick those ones up that you want, you know. Don't inundate me with, I want 1 through 5 and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, like, pick a couple that aren't up and I'll put them up, and then, you know, if I feel like it, I'll put more up. But, yeah, I'm going to try to put some older shows up. I don't know if I'm going to put all of those shows up. I'm on 74 right now. That's 74 shows. I've been doing it every week for 74 weeks. Without, and I even did it on my vacation. I'm always podcasting. I have been working for the last 74 weeks without any time off. Except for one. Actually, I took a week off when I went to New York. But that's that. Yeah, Miss Moonshine, very good. And if you live in Massachusetts, there's a whole ukulele culture thing going on here. So, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, I didn't mention it in the show, but I wanted to. It's the movie Brazil. And I mention it because of the facelift scene in it. And you'll know why later on the show. So I have links on my show notes to the Flatus Show store, where you can buy a copy of the stuff. I mention, I have this Amazon.com store. And for your convenience, I've placed products there that I've talked about. You're probably thinking, he's probably getting paid. Well, I can tell you, it's an associate store. First of all, I do it on my own, and I've made zero. You know, I don't think anybody's even clicked on the store. So if you do shop Amazon, you're interested in something I've talked about, then click on my Amazon link and take a look at it. I mean, you can buy Tab on there, ukuleles, Naked Lunch, cookbooks, you know. I picked out some things that I thought were appropriate. As fun stuff, you know, just so you too can have the same fun I do. So anyway, on with the shalash. That's Brenda Starr, you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you. Last time we left off, Lula was in the hospital, and we find that only that the hospital records say that only Mr. Jig Lovelady can can talk to the doctors on her behalf. Brenda leaves the hospital, kisses Lulu on the forehead, said, "I'll be back, honey." And she goes to see Tina Titan, who is a movie producer. She's the head of Medusa Studio. We find that Spiff helped Brenda get the interview with whatever her name is, Miss Titan, Tina Titan, and she's there to find out more about Jig Lovelady. During the conversation, Brenda says that she wants to find out about Jig Lovelady to help Lula. She doesn't mention Lula by name, but she wants to find out what his story is. So she says to Miss Titan, "I know you left with him that night." And she said, Titan says, "Oh, well, you are more respected if you leave, if you don't leave a party alone and with someone half your age." And Tina Titan does not look very old. And she goes, "Well, how old are you?" So Tina is taken aback and she's like, you just didn't ask me my age, did you, honey?" And Brenda's like, "Yeah, I did. I'm a reporter." She goes, "Well, you can ask me anything, what my filed on my taxes last year, but don't ask me how old I am." So she says, "Yeah, you're older than you look, right?" "Yeah, you too, Brenda." Meow. So Brenda is leaving Titans, and she looks down at these pictures on Miss Titan's desk, and she goes, "They look familiar." Okay, so the picture she looks at, and she goes, "I think I've seen this before." And Miss Titan says, "Oh, my mom. To my mom, she died when I was three, and I had to go to foster homes afterwards." And then she says, Brenda says, "Well, I've seen her before." "Well, no, you haven't, because she was a truck stop waitress in Palm Springs, when Palm Springs was a pothole in a 2-lane road. So she goes, get out, before I become tougher than a witch's toenails. Next scene, we see the face of, what's his name? Hold on, let me pause here. Darth, or whatever, Darth Vader, or Darth whatever. And not Darth Vader, but he sounds like Darth Vader. So he goes, "That's finally at last our ticket to wealth." And Jig says, "Sorry, old man, the dying old lady signed over her estate to me, not you." So the old man says, "But Jig, you promised." And Jig replies, "Promises are like peaches, old man, short shelf life." How evil Jig Lovelady is. So we see that Jig and the old man, Darth, are fighting. He's saying, "I want what's mine." "You're sorry, old man, this is what this town's like." And a struggle ensues. And you see Jig's hands at the collar of Darth. Next, we find Brenda. She's in a coffee shop. And she says, "What should I be doing now?" And then she thinks, that's the life's ultimate existential questions. Sometimes you just have to pick an answer at random. So she goes to Darth Fable's house. It's at Darth Fable. And she goes, "I think he's been lying to me." And she goes inside and she's like, "No!" So we find that he's dead. Fable is dead. And Brenda Starr calls Spiff, the gossip columnist, the Hollywood gossip columnist. And she calls him over and says, "Listen, Spiff, this is the scoop of your career. This is Darth Fable." He didn't even know he was still alive. So she says, "No, I should call the cops. Let me just get out of here, and, then you can deal with it." So she goes, rushes home, or where she's living, Lula's house, the big thing. And there's Jig Lovelady with his shirt off, all muscled up. And he's like, "Okay, kids, make yourselves at home." He has all these beautiful people around. And Brenda comes up. "This isn't your home yet, not until Lula Moore, while she still breathes, while Lula Lamore still breathes." I think Brenda's getting upset at Jig Lovelady. So Jig says, "Well, Lula bequeathed the house to me on her deathbed. I have the signed paper." And Brenda's like, "Well, Lula is still alive, Jig. Unlike Darth Fable." Ta-da! So he says, "What? Darth Fable's dead? How do you know?" "You killed him," Brenda says. "You killed him, didn't you? Just the way you tried to kill Lula." And so he takes Brenda's hand, pushes back her wrist, says, "Get out of my house, you bitch!" He doesn't really say that. So we find that Jig has had Brenda's stuff all packed up and ready to go. "You're evicted," he says. And Alphonse, the head butler or whatever, has already gotten the stuff together. So Brenda leaves. She's going to stay in a hotel. And Alphonse is going to watch Patch while she's away. And Alphonse says, "But we forgot to ask your mistress for her key." Lulu's back in the... No, not Lulu's back in the hospital. Jose! That's Patch. No, that's Jose. Acting like Patch. Okay, so anyway. Brenda is back at the hospital to see Lula. And the TV's on. And we find out about the murder of Darth Fable. They're looking for the murder weapon in... And in the Oscar winning, the death of the Oscar winning legend. And so Brenda says, Darth's Oscar. I remember seeing it last time, but it wasn't there when she found the body. So that's probably the murder weapon. And so Spiff is talking to the reporter. And then Tina Titan is joined them. And she's just announced that she's going to remake the Darth Fable film Ashes of Desire. Remember, that's the movie that Lula showed Brenda. And so Brenda's there like, Lula, I thought you had the only copy. And then with the reporter says, Miss Titan, how did you obtain the rights to Ashes of Desire? Then you hear the machine going, beep, 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 beep. And Brenda's there going, nurse, Lula, Lula, nurse, nurse, nurse. So the reporter's like, good luck for you, Miss Titan, that Darth Fable's murder puts him in the news. Just as you're about to announce the remake of the unknown film Ashes of Desire. Now, you know, it makes you think that Miss Titan and Jig Lovelady had something going on. So the reporter is asking Tina Titan about how she obtained the rights to Ashes of Desire. She's like, just pure luck, honey. So the nurse comes in to see Lula, and she's like, what are you doing? Why is her heart rate going? And Brenda's there like, I think she heard something on the TV. So she goes, but no. And then the nurse is like, no more visitors, honey. Honey, honey, honey. Yeah. How can I say honey anymore and not think of Cheryl Murkowski? But anyway, Lula says, bye-bye, Lula. And Brenda's out there thinking, now, how did Tina get a copy of Lula's Ashes of Desires? And the phone's ringing, and we find out it's Mike Mooney calling her. So Mike Mooney's on the bench, and he's drunk as a skunk, and he's like, did you come to arrest me? And she says, being drunk is not a crime. And he goes, but killing your best friend is. So Mike Mooney tells the story that he killed. He's saying he killed Darth Fable. So he's drinking. He's very drunk, we find out, right? So he says, you just stirred up all these memories in me, Brenda. So I went to go see Darth Fable. And so we find that he wants to stop feuding. So Darth Fable invites him in and says, hey, how about a drink? And Mike Mooney says, okay, well, I haven't had one in 30 years, so he's probably an alcoholic, but okay, for a special occasion. So Darth Fable has a martini, and Mike Mooney has a Manhattan, it looks like. So finally, Darth Fable says, well, how's Lula doing? And then Mike Mooney, in drunk confession, says, but you stole her, you bitch, you stole my Oscar. So Mike Mooney continues talking to people, but you could have had half the women in the world. Why did you have to take Lula? You aren't man enough for Lula, Darth, or for any woman. Mike Mooney says, but Darth Fable said his greatest sex symbol was a fraud. And Brenda's like, what do you mean by that, Mikey? Never interrupt an actor when he's giving it to telling a story. Yeah. So Mikey's like, you got that girl in the movie, you got the, not the movie, you got the girl in the Oscar. Finally, Darth says, you know what, I got the girl in the Oscar, and I really don't care about them. So Mike Mooney picks up the Oscar and hits Darth Fable over the head. At this point, so he goes, and I killed him. He's drinking. And so Brenda says, listen, Mikey, this is what you have to do. And that's where we're at. Do, do, do. Do, do, do. Do, 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 do.
Skies of blue begin to gray. Crimson hues are fading in the west. Evening ever brings to me dreams of days that used to be. Memories of those I love the best. When shadows fall and trees whisper day is ending, my thoughts are ever wending home. When crickets call, my heart is forever yearning once more to be returning home. When the hills conceal the setting sun, stars begin a peeping one by one. Night covers all, and though fortune may forsake me, sweet dreams will ever take me home.
Welcome to this section of the Flatus Show, where we're going to learn all about medical procedures. It's a new section of the Flatus Show, just like Brenda Starr and the Bible and all that. But we're going to learn about medical procedures. So today's guest is the cancer registrar from a Boston area medical unit. So, Mr. John. What is the topic? Today's topic is going to be colostomies. So my first question is, what is a colostomy?
A colostomy is... Hi, Kenty.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be on your show. A colostomy is a surgical procedure where the anus and the colon are removed. No, excuse me. The anus and the rectum, sorry, are removed. And a bag is attached to the colon, to the remaining part of the colon, and that's where you poop from for the rest of your life, sometimes. Well, they're actually permanent colostomies and temporary colostomies.
What's the difference between a permanent colostomy and a temporary colostomy?
Well, if you have colon cancer or some other colon disease, and you have to have surgery, I'm talking about a temporary colostomy now. Sometimes they do the surgery and the colon needs to rest.
Okay.
So they give you a colostomy and it's temporary, and then after a certain amount of time, 6 weeks, 7, 8 weeks, whatever it is, it's called a takedown. They do a second surgery where they go in and they reconnect the colon to the rectum.
Ah.
After the colon has had a chance to rest and recover.
Okay, so what part of the intestines do they put into the stoma on the colostomy? Like, what do they take out?
First of all, I should probably
tell you
what the stoma is. A stoma is an opening in the abdominal wall. In other words, it's sort of kind of, I think they kind of put it near your belly button, like next to your belly button or below, above. And what they do is they, after they've done the surgery where they remove the anus and they remove the rectum, they mechanically, during the surgery, take the loose end of the colon and they bring it up to the abdominal wall and they stitch it to the abdominal, inside of the abdominal wall, and they cut a hole so that you actually have a new hole in your body.
The colon or?
The colon. They bring the colon, which is a tube, bring it up to the, I bring it from where it was connected to the rectum, and they bring it, this is all happening on the inside, they bring it up to the inside of the abdominal wall, and they sew it to the inside of the abdominal, and they cut a hole.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, your new anus is, like, around your navel.
Near your belly button, okay. Right. But that's for the temporary one, right? Or is
Either.
That for permanent?
Either.
Well, since you have colon cancer, they have to take out your colon.
Well, they don't take out the whole colon very often.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's always going to be the colon. The large intestines are going to remain intact?
The colon is the large intestine.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they could take out some the colon.
Let me define the colon. Colon is, actually the anus is not part of the colon, but the rectum is part of the colon.
What's the anus?
The anus is attached to the rectum, separate body part.
What is it, though? Is it like the hole, like the outside?
So you don't know what your anus is. Well, I think you're being troubled.
Well, when you say rectum, it's like, what's a rectum?
The anus is the opening into the body from the outside.
Okay.
It includes the sphincter.
Okay.
Right? It's very short, you know, a few inches long.
Yeah.
A couple inches long. And then the tissue, actually the type of tissue that is the rectum changes after you go in a couple inches, and that's the rectum. And then after the rectum is the sigmoid, and after the sigmoid is the transverse colon, where the colon turns a corner.
Yeah.
And then it goes, you know, and then there's the ascending colon, and the cecum, and so on, and you go into this plate, and then it becomes the small intestine.
Okay.
The colon is that whole length from the rectum to the cecum.
Okay.
Cecum to the rectum. And so they cut, wherever the cancer is, they cut. If the cancer is low in the rectum,
mm-hmm.
then you have a bigger chance of losing your rectum and your anus. Because the whole issue is the sphincter.
Mm-hmm.
If they have to take out the sphincter, then the poop will just fall out of you.
Yeah.
After they sew you up. So if you have colon cancer and your cancer is a little bit farther up, then they just cut out that segment of the colon and then they sew the two segments together. That's called an anastomosis.
Oh.
Yeah. And
hold on, Jose.
But if you're unlucky enough to have a colon in the lower rectum, you can just kiss your sphincter goodbye.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So, okay, let me just introduce Jose here. Jose has come onto my lap. He's awake for the interview. Okay, so let's talk about life with a colostomy. What would life be like if someone had a permanent colostomy?
Well,
like, how do they poop? Like, what happens?
That's well, what I, really I actually want to get know. To. I've actually asked a lot of questions about this lately where I work, and so I have some answers. The you have a bag. The bag is about the size of a gallon freezer bag.
Mm-hmm.
And this bag has a hole in it on the side. It's got a hole in it that attaches to the. It's got a hole in it.
Is there
on
like
the side of the bag?
Yeah, the stoma, right? Is there something in the stoma, like some sort of like metal thing that they screw on?
No,
it's just a hole.
Just a hole of skin that, you know, it just looks like a...
Like you could stick your finger in it.
Well, yeah, you probably could. Might not want to, but...
But you could.
You could, yeah. No, it's not closed or... You don't
so it's
have
not
to
mechanical.
No.
Okay, it's not like a little valve.
No.
Okay.
So what they do is they have this kind of anatomical glue, and they put the glue around the stoma.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the bag just gets glued to the stoma, and then...
Each day that you put it on?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to put it on, you have to apply the glue and then put the bag on.
Put the bag on, and then you poop into the bag. And from what I can gather from recent questions I asked to one of the surgeons that I work with, you don't feel the urge to poop when you have a stoma because you don't have the nerves that are involved in that feel, in the feeling of that urge, which are located in the rectum, the lower rectum, because that has been removed. And so you just go into the bag, and you don't feel it, you don't know it.
So you're telling me that if poop is not in your lower rectum, you're not even going to know you have to poop? You're going to have poop above that area, and because it's not going to touch the nerves in the lower rectum, you're not going to really want to...
Well, the rectum is gone.
Now, I'm talking about when people who do have a rectum, like when you feel like you have to poop, it's because the poop is right there in the lower rectum. It is
correct.
Touching the nerves, which say, I have to poop.
Right, correct.
Right? Yeah. So you could have a lot of shit in your ass, right?
Correct.
But if, as long as until it's touching those nerves, you're not going to know.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
That's what I want
to... So you go, although there's a little, I have to qualify that a little bit, and that is that Rich Swanson, oops, can I say names here?
Well, I wouldn't. Sure.
Okay.
But I'll,
anyway, he's a surgeon that I work with. And he's a cancer surgeon. And he said that some people train their colostomies.
Their holes, you mean?
They the stomas, I'm sorry. Yeah, they train their stomas so that they don't have to use the bag. Hmm. They know when, they come to know because of what time they eat, etc., when the poop is going to, like, come out of the stoma into the bag. And so they don't wear the bag to work.
Do they train their stoma, or they just know the way their body works? Well, like, can they hold it closed?
Thing. Yeah, same thing. No. No. No, it's just observation.
I see.
Just observation. And so sometimes, they'll go to work, they don't wear the bag, and then, because they know what time the poop is going to come out into the bag.
Okay, this is a question I'm sure it's burning in the minds of all of my Flatus Show listeners. What about farting? Do people fart through their stomas?
I haven't had that question answered by a physician, but I imagine they do. Where else are they going to fart from?
So, I mean, if you're standing there and somebody has a colostomy without a bag, you're going to see a little puff of air in their, like, the side of their shirt?
Well, they probably have wearing clothes, so you wouldn't see that.
You see a little
that,
puff but... there, maybe? Okay, what about skid marks? Now, is that would be the skid marks would be on what? The bag or maybe the shirt?
Kenty, I think this interview is devolving.
But everybody wants to know about these things. I mean, colostomy bag, with colostomies, right?
Okay.
So they have to worry about skid marks.
You probably have to worry about more than skid marks because you don't have that urgency, that sense of having to go, so... You're not wearing your bag,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know that you have to go. You're gonna have more than skid marks.
Does it all come at once, like a turd?
I don't know.
They didn't say. It's not solid.
So here's
like
here's,
poke out of your body like the alien in Alien.
No, here's the real burning question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if your listeners actually you asked this question to me.
Okay.
When we were driving to work one day, and that is. When you have a colostomy,
mm-hmm.
is the anus sewed shut?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it left open?
Yeah, that's actually my next question.
So, should we leave this a mystery and have your listeners, like, vote in there whether or not the anus is sewed shut or left open?
We could,
open,
and I could answer
I
it next.
You?
Well, why don't you answer me, right, and I'll cut it out, and we'll put it in the challenge. And what should some of the answers be? Like, use a cork?
No, the answers are, well, if you have a permanent colostomy, the poop is going to go through the colon to the stoma and out into the bag.
That's right.
Whether the anus is sewed shut or not.
Yeah, or has a cork in it.
Well, they don't put a cork in it.
Well, now my listeners know that there's no cork.
Any asshole is going to know that a doctor isn't going to stuff a cork into an anus. Right, Jose?
Well, maybe in the early days when the colostomies just started.
Well, maybe they did.
Okay, anyway.
Okay, so you want me to answer the question?
Yeah, I do.
The answer to the burning question is they sew it up.
So they have no asshole?
No. soda. And here's why. When they do the surgery, you have to imagine that they go around the anus and they with the scalpel and they cut around the whole anus, around it, not just, they don't just pull it, and the rectum, and they pull the rectum and the anus right out, so there's nothing there.
Oh!
There's no anus there. There's no...
Oh! This is like nip-tuck.
Well, this is what they do. And so they take the skin of the perineum? They take the skin, anyway, after they take the anus and the rectum out, they just bring the skin together and they sew it up.
Oh.
That's it.
Well, you mentioned that, actually, in medieval times, the way they tortured people was to cut the ass out, like you mentioned, tie it to a tree, or nail it to a tree, and have the person walk away from the tree.
Oh, nice.
Ugh. And it killed them.
Yeah. So, What else can I say about colostomies? Another question that I asked is, why doesn't somebody invent a mechanical sphincter so that people wouldn't have to have a colostomy? In other words, they take the anus out and they replace it with a mechanical sphincter so that they'd be able to keep their...
Yeah.
Their
like a remote control sphincter. That's the sound of twit.
Or just like a mechanical sphincter that... You know, the peristalsis operates.
Oh,
and the answer to that question is that actually people are working on it.
Really?
Yeah,
so the body, this mechanical sphincter will know when you have the urge to go?
No.
Oh.
You'll just have to, like, go sit down on the toilet, like, every now and then poop. But it won't fall out of you.
It will stay in there until you...
Until you're ready to poop, right.
So how do you poop? I mean...
Just sit down and poop.
It's a poop, think poop?
I guess.
Or do you, like, hit a little button?
No, I think it's just you just sit down and you go.
How do you wipe yourself on that sort of thing?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Hmm. So I guess, like, a shower, right? A regular shower could be, like, a bidet for people with colostomies. Right? Because it, like, shoots water, like, on the anus.
Well, I guess so. Like, if the shower was coming out of the side of the wall rather than the top.
Oh, yeah. It is on the side of your body, isn't it? Is there a reason why the front? Is there a reason why it's not put elsewhere? Like,
there's probably some kind of anatomical reason, but I don't know what it is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Colostomies. Yeah. Oh, there's one more thing, and that is that this is an interesting thing, and that is that the gold standard for treatment of cancer of the lower rectum and the anus is to remove the anus and the rectum and install a permanent colostomy. But when you tell a patient that,
mm-hmm.
some of those patients say, no fucking way.
Because who wants a colostomy?
Right, who wants a colostomy?
You can never wear a Speedo again.
That's right. No fucking way.
Yeah.
So those patients sometimes will get chemotherapy and radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And they will have a more low, what do they call it? They'll have a, what's it called? They will have a transanal resection. In other words, the surgeon will go up through the anus,
mm-hmm.
cut out the cancer from the inside, and then come out, and there's no removal of anything.
Just not the cancerous part.
Yeah, it's not the gold standard, but some patients just won't have... I think I would be one of those patients.
Yeah, I want my ass. Well, so, unless it's in your sphincter, too. Then it has to come out. Right?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
So...
No, because anal cancer is not treated in the same way as rectal cancer.
Oh, so how's anal cancer treated?
And let me tell you why it's not the same. And that is the tissue in the body... tissue of the rectum is not the same. The tissue of the rectum is the same type of tissue as the tissue of the rest of the colon.
Mm-hmm.
But the tissue of the rectum is more like skin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is understandable if you like think about your anus. Mm. Sorry, the tissue of your anus is more like skin.
Yeah.
And so the type of cancer that occurs in the anus is usually squamous cell carcinoma.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the type of cancer that occurs in the rectum or the colon, which is adenocarcinoma, that's what determines the difference in the treatment. So people who have who are unfortunate enough to get anal cancer, they will have chemotherapy and radiation because that's the type of treatment that goes with squamous cell carcinoma of the anus.
I see. So, okay, let's just talk about colostomies once more. So you're telling me I could be shaking somebody's hand, they could be pooping at the same time if they have a colostomy?
Yeah.
And I might not even know they have
you
a colostomy?
Might not know. Or you might if it smells.
Oh, yeah. Could be a hole. Like, what do you do? Okay, Miss Manners, okay. You're talking to somebody who you know has a colostomy, right? And they're at a Christmas party. And they're laughing and they're like, ha, 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 ha. Right, then you see the brown spot on their shirt. What
so these,
do you
this
do?
Is one of those
How
people,
do you go to that person and say, you're pooping?
This is one of those people that, like, just has trained their stomach,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Because otherwise it would go in the bag.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do? I don't know. That would be a good question to write into Miss Manners.
Yeah. What do you do? How do you say that? You're pooping. Drinking your eggnog, go over to them. You're pooping. Hold your nose.
I don't know.
Hmm.
Me, I think I might just excuse myself and
leave the party.
Well, I'll just go get another drink or something.
You know? Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for this wonderful interview, because I'm sure my listeners are enlightened with the information they received.
Anytime, Kenty.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Shadows creep where weary birds are nesting, and twilight bids the sleepy rose good night. When drowsy breezes speak to you of resting, do they whisper that the world's all right? When you come to the end of the day and the night calls your worries away, do you ever watch the setting sun and dream of things that you might have done? Do you turn from your work with a smile? Do you feel that it's all worth the while? As you dream the twilight hours of day, when you come to the end of the day. It's all worth the while as you dream the twilight hours away, when you come to the end of the day.
John and I rented a movie The Shop Around the Corner the other day, which is a film made in 1940, starring Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullavan. It's based on a play by Miklos Laszlo, a Hungarian playwright. It was a Hungarian play from 1937. And it's about a man and a woman who are who write to each other, write letters to each other anonymously. What happens is they end up working, they work at the same store. They don't know that the other person is the person who's writing to them. And so all sorts of things happen. It's a really good movie. Interestingly enough, this play has been made into several different movies and musical, actually. In 1949, it was adapted, a musical adaptation was made. It was called In the Good Old Summertime with Judy Garland and Van Johnson. In 1998, You've Got Mail brought this play to the electronic age. In 1963, the musical She Loves Me was, that's the year the musical was written, and that's the same story. But what I thought was interesting was, in the movie, one of the characters says, does she look young? You know, did this woman look young? They're referring to this woman. And the guy said, she looked around 40. And the woman who asked him, the guy, about how young this one woman looked, she goes, she had a facelift. And I thought, geez, that's kind of early. I didn't know they had facelifts in 1940, but I guess they did. But the play was written in 1937. So they had to have facelifts then. So I took a little search. I did a little search and found out the first facelift was performed in 1901. Which brought me to a bigger search about a more in-depth search about plastic surgery. A little interesting note about this Hungarian play, which was made into three films and a musical. There was one official translation of it for the French stage, and it was called Parfumerie. The original Hungarian title is I can't pronounce. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Illatzerar. Illatzerar. It's a little side note about Hungarian. But there was no English translation of the play. And a couple years ago, there was a man who wanted to perform the play, you know, wanted to produce it, but he had a hard time. It took him 8 months to find out who had the rights to it. So, plastic surgery, according to what I found online, the first facelift was done in 1901. But plastic surgery, right, plastic means, it's a Greek, from the Greek word meaning to mold or to give form. So that's basically what we're doing, it's forming the face or some part of the body. I bit my cheek the other day and it hurts. Schmerzen. So, plastic surgery, right, goes back as far as 3000 BC. It's written in Egyptian and Indian and Egyptian writings. The first plastic surgery was done for the nose, basically. Can you believe it? Yes, in ancient Egypt or whatever. Queen Hatshepsut, I have a bump on my nose. I need the priest to come and take the bump off my nose. So they had plastic surgery that helped fix facial trauma, especially the nose. There's a reason why this. There's a saying called necessity is the mother of invention. You know, I'm sort of in pain. My back hurts. Oh, I need somebody. Okay, is there a guy or practitioner out there who can help me? I'm gonna, ow, my elbow. I'm just all sorts of pain here. Not really pain, just uncomfortable. I don't know if I slept my back wrong or what. So anyway, apparently in the past, something that was popular to do to people was to cut their nose off. Was to cut their nose off or bite their nose off. And it was something to show people did this to... If somebody did something wrong, they would cut the person's nose off. So it would be a testament to that they did something bad. And I guess it happened with a great degree of regularity. So Indian physicians created a method of reconstructing the nose. And it's written about, and apparently it still works. And it wasn't like, you know, their doctors, their medical system created this. It was like the cast of barbers or whatever. Like, let me see in my notes here. It says something interesting. Let's see here. Yeah. Okay, 3,000 years ago, papyrus. So they had this thing called the Indian method using a pedicle cheek flap. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we're in India, okay? And I can't remember this thing. Oh, yeah, here it is. The surgery. They said it took about an hour and a half to do, but these Indian guys, I can't find it. Here it is, 15 minutes. It was reported that it took about an hour and a half to do the nasal surgery, nasal reconstructions. However, it was reported that the procedure took only 15 minutes, six minutes for the flap dissection and 9 minutes for the homeostasis enclosure. This all happened without the benefit of anesthesia. And once this is done, the dressing was removed after the third day. Now, this is performed by brickmakers. Okay, the brickmaker caste. The British physician said, well, if brickmakers can do this, I can do it. Well, they were wrong, because they really didn't understand what they were doing. Apparently, the British doctors went back. And this actually happened in the 19th century, when Britain was in India. So there. So anyway, so we have reconstructive surgery in India and Egypt. And it was also found in Rome as well. What is thought is that in the 10th century, Muslims took over India. And it was the spread, and that the Muslims who spread the knowledge about nasal reconstruction that brought it to the West. Muslims, I think, are also responsible for bringing chess to the West. It was an Indian game. Chess was Indian, and then the Muslims, as they conquered the world, brought chess with them. So we have, you know, this great sort of, I don't know if great is the right word, but, you know, medical knowledge, sophisticated medical knowledge, 3,000 years ago up through, you know, before the Common Era, before Christ, up into the, like, even the 5th century, Justinian, and Emperor Justinian II. He was overthrown, and his nose was mutilated so that he couldn't... It was disfigured so he wouldn't be able to regain status as emperor. However, he had reconstruction surgery, and he overthrew he actually became an emperor again, so... Now, as time went on, right, with Christianity and stuff, and going into the Middle Ages, or the Dark Ages, the whole idea of medicine and surgery became a thought game, so to speak. And people who were studying it, medicine, they didn't want to do any kind of surgery. They didn't want to get their hands dirty. It was all theory, okay? And so a lot of these procedures were lost to time because they weren't practiced. And at this time, there was a split. So you had, somebody had to do the surgeries. I mean, surgery was still needed. You needed to have a suture. You need to do something, right? That's when you have the barber surgeons. Now, a barber originally was somebody who not only shaved your face, but could, you know, attach leeches to you and cut you open and bleed you. I think it was called, and pull your tooth out, you know, do surgery. And that is why the barber pole is red and white. It's supposed to be, the red represents blood. So there was a disconnect in science during the Dark Ages. It wasn't until the Renaissance that, you know, there was a... that the art of surgery and stuff, you know, came back, that, you know, the light started showing up on the earth again. I'm sure that some fundamentalist Christians don't believe that. So we have, where is this? Oh, this is interesting. Okay, Islamic in Turkey and stuff. Okay, so the Islamic conquest of India in the 10th century, they had all these, you know, facial reconstruction ideas, right? They invaded and occupied Europe and Sicily in the 9th and 12th centuries. Because remember, the Muslims took over Spain. So, and they brought chests and reconstructive surgery and plastic surgery. So they had, there was written surgery. Okay, there's a particular Turkish Islamic literature. There was a guy named Serafeddin Sabunkuglu, something like that. And he had written of techniques for eyelid disorders and gynecomastia. Now, gynecomastia is a condition in men where they grow tits. And, you know, there's enough fatty deposits. I mean, it actually creates, you know, like a boob, you know. I mean, overly overweight men usually are gynecomastic. They have tits, so... And so there was surgery to get rid of the tits on these, you know, fat men, I guess. Or your men who grew tits for whatever reason. And apparently his treatment, the surgery for this is very complete. And it's actually what is used. It's what today's treatment, right, or today's technique or whatever is based on that. Interesting. So we're coming into the 19th, 18th century, where I told you the British were in East India, and they saw that the brickmaker caste people were doing all these operations, right? That's 1794, and then they came back saying, oh, I can do it, jolly-o. I'll work on some corpses, and we'll see if I can't do it. If a brickmaker can do it, I can. Well, the Indian brickmakers were much better at it because it took them forever for the British to learn what to do. However, the Germans looked into it, and Karl von Graf, a surgeon, published a work called Rhinoplastik, and he described reconstructive surgery, and it became fairly popular, you know, helping people out with cleft lips and all sorts of things. It wasn't until the late 1800s that the aesthetic influence, that it became, you know, that the aesthetic portion of plastic surgery came to be what's the right word? Focused on. You know, some people would go in and say, oh, you know, I really don't need to have reconstructive surgery, but can you take this bump off my nose? Or, you know, and then it wasn't, you know, that much further when people said, I want a facelift so I can look younger. And all sorts of other things than we have today. Doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Tummy tucks. And look at Michael Jackson. But there's a group of people, it was in the late 19th century, that it was actually discovered or noted that there were people who had a pathology for body modification to go in and have things done for, like, no apparent reason. They just had to have things done, you know. So that's a, you know, condition that was, you know, realized or noticed in the late 19th century. What I want to know is, before plastic surgery was, you know, established, or before most people knew about it, right? What did people with this condition do? You know, like in the Middle Ages, you know, there's no, you know, who knows? Like they have a condition where they have to have body modifications. What do these people do? Are they the ones who, like, cut off their hands and stuff like that, and their fingers? It's very strange. You wonder. So anyway, plastic surgery, you know, started with the nose, but soon helped things like cleft lips and cleft palates. In fact, for cleft lips, there's a thing called a hair lip needle used to sew together the lip, I guess. Skin grafting also has been noted. It was noted in written form years ago, 2,500 years ago. It was in 1570 that Fioravante was the first to report a successful skin autograft, as recorded in the following account. I want to read this. A certain gentleman, a Spaniard, that was called Il Signor Andreas Gutiero, struggled with a soldier who cut off his nose, and there it fell down in the sand. And I, who had it in my hand, all full of sand, urinated on it, and having washed it with urine, dressed it, and bound it up, and so left it to remain 8 to 10 days. Now, you might think, I mean, that's disgusting, but urine is actually, disease-free. I guess unless you have a kidney infection, but it is sterile. Urine is sterile. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff in there, but it is sterile. Urine is sterile under normal conditions. And in fact, people who have Prince Albert's, that is a piercing in the penis, they say, you know, you should urinate as often as possible because it washes it, keeps it clean. So if you ever need to clean your hands and you want to have sterile liquid, just piss in your hands to wash yourself. The smell of urine. Apparently, if babies, boy babies, I don't think girl babies can do this, but boy babies who pee in their mother's face apparently makes you beautiful, makes women beautiful. So I've been told. So that's the wonders of urine and plastic surgery. Not even interestingly enough. However, as I said, necessity is the mother of invention, right? Now, World War I was one of the most costliest wars the world has ever seen. I mean, you know, in all countries, the death toll and all the maiming. And, well, you know, when you have a bunch of people who are maimed and hurt, in a short period of time, you have doctors who have to do a lot of stuff. So it's during these, have to heal them, you know. So it's during this time that actually there are advances in things like plastic surgery. You know, people are missing a limb, they're burnt. So, you know, they have to go beyond what they already know to help these people, you know, graft on new skin. So, of course, you know, people are going to die. But then as they, it sounds sad, but I mean, you know, the doctors then learn, okay, you can't do that, you have to do this. And so forth and so on. And so there, between, after, you know, during World War I and especially after World War II, there was a lot of advances in medicine, helping with things like, you know, it's something like plastic surgery, you know, the techniques and everything. Because you have an increased number of people who are harmed, who need your help, who need the help to get better, be fixed or whatever. So I guess there is, you know, a good side to war. You know, it helps plastic surgeons. I'm only joking here, you know, when I say that. There's no good reason for war. Unless you're fighting for your liberty. Which, you know, you would too, right? I'd be the first one there. So anyway, that's what the little history of plastic surgery. And the movie, Shop Around the Corner. Rent it. It's good. And that's it. So, go have your nose done.
You've been listening to The Flake Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE. Or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatishow.com. Thank you for listening.